Dundee had seen ranches where it didn't take long to spend the night, but this place was extreme. McCown was up and stirring 2 hours before good daylight. Dundee had spread his blankets outdoors beneath the arbor. Through the open window, he could hear McCown poking a fire into life in the big cook stove and fussing at Uncle Ollie to rouse his lazy bones and get his clothes on so Millie could come in from her side of the cabin and start breakfast. Dundee dressed in the dark, hiding himself beneath a blanket until he had his pants on. McCown put in an hour of work on the fence before breakfast. Dundee felt he ought to do something to pay for the hospitality, so he jerked an axe loose from the chopping block and cut stove wood until Millie McCown called the men in. They ate hurriedly, McCown impatient to get on with work. Nobody talked much. Dundee stole glances at the girl by lamplight. The sun came up, and McCown blew out the lamp to save coal oil.
Well, Dundee, Uncle Ollie and I have got work to do, and I expect you're anxious to get on your way.
As a matter of fact, Dundee wasn't, for he kind of liked sitting here looking at the girl. But he knew an invitation to leave when he heard one.
Yeah, I reckon. I got a right smart of ground to cover.
He was behind the saddle shed, lashing down the pack when he heard horses. He glanced cautiously around the cedar stake wall. Five riders were nearing the cabin. A heavy-set old man with a hunch to his shoulders raised a big hand, and the riders stopped. The old man rode on a couple more yards.
McCown! I came to parley with you!
Warren McCown stepped out onto the small porch, followed by a cringing Uncle Ollie. Both had six-shooters strapped around their waists. Millie McCown's frightened face appeared in the doorway. Seeing her, the old man took off his floppy old hat. His gray hair sparkled like frost in the early sun.
Morning, Mr. McCown. I swear you do get prettier every time I see you.
If she made any reply, Dundee couldn't hear it. As yet unseen, he decided to stay put a while.
Little lady, what I gotta say to your brother ain't of no concern to you. And if there was any cuss words to be accidentally dropped, I wouldn't want them falling on your ears. Ain't you got some chickens to feed or a cow to milk or something?
Millie didn't move.
I promise you, ma'am, there's not a man here would harm a hair on your head. I'd shoot anyone that tried. Now, why don't you go on off and take care of the chores or something, so me and your brother can have us a talk.
Go on, Millie.
Millie McCown glanced fearfully at the men, then walked briskly toward the saddle shed. Dundee stepped out of sight, knowing the men's gaze would follow her. When she came around the shed, Dundee put his finger to his lips.
I reckon that'd be Blue Roan.
If there's trouble, will you help my brother? I'll take another look at that tally book. I'll give you the names of all the people I know.
Right then, he'd have charged hell with a bucket of water if she'd asked him to, and not for any tally book. He stepped to his bay and gingerly slipped the carbine up out of the scabbard. He peered around the wall. The riders had their backs turned partially to him and all their attention riveted on the McCowns.
McCown, I understand you and some of my boys butted heads yesterday.
McCown only stared in defiance.
Now, boy, I thought you and me had come to an understanding. I told you how things was gonna be. Now, they're gonna be that way, whether it suits your pleasure or not.
This is my land.
Oh, you got some papers that were signed in Austin, but you're a long ways from Austin now. I was here before you ever come. I expect to stay here a long time yet. Whether you stay or not depends on you. Now, McCown, you got guts. I'll give you credit for that. Now, I'm not a mean sort of man. I don't like to have to go and get hard with anybody. And killing just ain't my idea of the right way at all. But boy, there's an end to my patience.
You got no right to dictate what goes on in this whole section of the country. You're just one man.
But I got a lot of men with me. You're just one man, McCown. And your uncle here makes two. You don't have to have no schooling to figure out that two is an awful little number.
Two and one makes three.
Dundee stepped out from behind the shed, the saddle gun cradled across his left arm, one finger in the trigger guard. He walked slowly toward the horseman. Big old Roan Hardesty twisted slowly in the saddle, surprised, squinting for recognition that wouldn't come. Dundee stopped, the rifle not pointed at anybody in particular, but in a position that it could, quickly. Hardesty stared.
Boy, I reckon you know how to shoot that thing?
Dundee nodded.
I got a feeling you do. You some kin of McCown's?
Never seen him till yesterday.
And how come you're siding with him?
I owe him for breakfast.
The old man's round face softened a little, for he seemed to find some odd kind of humor here.
Must have been a better breakfast than the one I got. Don't it occur to you that you may be paying too high a price? You could be making an awful big mistake.
I've made a few in my time. One more won't hurt me.
Don't bet on it. You can count, can't you? And there's plenty more where these come from. There ain't but three of you.
If trouble starts, I shoot you first. Wouldn't help you none if you had 100 men.
Logic like that, there ain't no use arguing with. I never did think I'd want to die in the cool of the morning. It's too pleasant a time to leave. Boys, let's be moving on. I think McCown has got a pretty good notion what I was meaning to tell him.
The men reined about, but they did it so as to keep Dundee in view. It seemed that they knew Dundee was the man to contend with rather than McCown. Roan Hardesty edged his dappled gray horse up closer to Dundee and halted. Only then did Dundee get a good look at the aging but strong face, the full power of stern gray eyes that fastened on a man like a pair of spikes. And he saw, without being told, why they called him Blue Roan. Across the side of his face, as if flung there by an angry hand, was a scattering of large blotches, like freckles almost, except that they were blue.
Young fella, nerve is a nice thing to have, as long as you don't abuse it.
I never was noted for good sense.
You'd best cultivate it then, or you may not be noted for long life either.
The old man turned and rode out of the McCown yard. Warren and Ollie McCown didn't move a toe until Hardesty's men were a good 200 yards away. Then McCown stepped down from the little porch and slowly walked to Dundee.
You didn't have to come out.
I owed you.
They wasn't fixing to do any shooting.
How do you know?
I just know. You could have stayed put like yesterday, then I wouldn't be left owing you.
Does it bother you, owing somebody?
Chews on me like a dog worrying a bone.
And forget it. Like I told Hardesty. I just paid for my breakfast.
Dundee turned away sharply and left McCown standing there. At the saddle shed, Millie McCown waited, her face a shade whiter. She watched as he slipped the saddle gun back into the scabbard.
Thank you, Mr. Dundee.
Thank you, ma'am, for saying thanks. You must have learned it from your old daddy. Didn't come from your brother.
You're a good man, Mr. Dundee.
Some people would argue with that.
Not with me, they wouldn't. Now, where's that tally book?
It turned out she didn't know but a couple of the brands. She didn't get away from this house much. But anything was good for a start. Dundee swung into the saddle, then took off his hat.
Thanks for the good meals, ma'am. They'll be long remembered.
So will you. Come on back again when you get hungry. I'll be glad to cook some more.
You can expect me, ma'am.
Dundee gave the lead rope a tug to bring along the pack horse. He didn't put his hat back on until he was out of the gate. He cut across country and found the trail of the T-bar cattle still almost as plain as yesterday. Wind had begun to smooth the tracks, but he figured a blind man could still follow them, riding backwards. He moved along at a steady trot, his gaze sweeping the cedars and the live oaks up the valley ahead of him and back down the valley behind him. It wasn't hard to figure why the rustlers chose this route to move cattle. The grass was good and water was plentiful. They didn't have to climb up and down a lot of rocky hills. That would appeal to a lazy man. In Dundee's reckoning, the average rustler was inclined to be basically a lazy man, shunning honest work. He had little sympathy for the breed. Hard work, he had always figured, was not something to be feared. Avoided if possible, but not feared. And not avoided at the cost of making oneself an outlaw. He had seen some of the running kind through the years, always looking back over their shoulders, always wearing guns loose in their holsters, checking the back door before they trusted the front. That, he had decided long ago, was too high a price to avoid honest work. Most of the long riders he had ever known had lived in fear, then died broke and hungry and in mortal pain. It was a coyote life and death. Badly as he disliked sweat, sometimes it was better than blood. He came to a grassy pecan bottom where the herd evidently had been held a while to settle down and allow the cows and calves to pair. Then the cattle had been split into two bunches. One set had been pushed westward, the other south. Dundee arbitrarily chose the south. He had to devote closer attention to the trail now, for the ground was rockier. The cattle had been moved into rougher country, where limestone hills were more rugged, the post oak and cedar thicker, the grass thinner. At times he couldn't be sure where the driven cattle's prints stopped and loose range cattle began. He would circle and hunt till he found a horse track, and then he knew he was still right. He was about to concede defeat when he heard a calf in the distance. He knew the sound. He would bet the calf had been roped, or perhaps it was being branded. Drawing the saddle gun, he walked the horse slowly, watching the ground to avoid loose rocks or fallen timber. Each time he heard the bawling, he could tell he was closer. Afraid to crowd his luck, he finally tied the two horses and moved on afoot, cradling the carbine. He crouched to see under the low timber and to be able to drop instantly into cover. He picked his footing carefully amid treacherous loose stones and rotted scrub brush. He climbed a hill and tried vainly to see a way down the other side that would keep him under cover. He had to backtrack part way and circle the long way around, staying well below the hill's crest to remain in the brush. Lying on his belly, he looked down the small valley below him to cattle bunched in one end of a crude brush corral, two men and a horse with them. Every so often, one of the men would climb onto the horse, swing a loop, and drag a big calf by its heels. The other man would grab the calf's tail and jerk the bawling critter down on its side, then kneel on the neck and hold a foreleg. The horse would hold the rope taut and keep the animal helpless. The rider would step down, walk to a small fire, and pick out a long iron. Dundee couldn't tell at the distance, but he would bet a keg of snakehead whiskey that this was a running iron designed to change brands. He wished for the spyglass he'd left in the saddlebag. He wanted to be sure about those brands. Now the only way was to move closer. Keeping to the brush, he crept downhill toward the corral. He stopped again, for now he saw a rude log cabin he'd overlooked from up on the hill. He studied it a long time, wondering if somebody was in it. He saw no smoke curling out of the chimney. He waited, warily watching for movement. None came. The man throwing the calves was the big rider who'd been in charge of the stolen herd, the one who had seen to it that Warren McCown was beaten to the ground. He still wore that Mexican sombrero. Dundee didn't intend to show himself. All he wanted was to get close enough to see the brands and get a good look at these men's faces. Intent on watching the men, he missed seeing a downed cedar. The men ran for cover of the heavy brush fence. Almost before Dundee quit sliding, flame lanced from between logs. He was exposed and he knew it. What he didn't know was how good a pistol shot old Mexican Hat might be. Dundee swung the saddle gun. The moment the wood chips flew from where the bullet hit, he sprinted for a rock the size of a wash tub. He fired again. Ah! From behind the fence, he caught a frenzy of movement. At first, he thought it was the cattle, stirred into panic by the firing. Then he saw the smaller of the men jump up on the horse and spur hard. The horse went up over the low brush fence in a long leap, caught his hind feet and almost fell, straightened and went on, the rider spurring him all the way. Dundee aimed, reconsidered, and lowered the muzzle. He had never shot a man in the back, and he didn't want to cultivate any bad habits at this late date. He turned his attention back to the fence.
Well, Mexican Hat's your move now. Do something.
He waited, but nothing happened. Impatient, Dundee aimed at the same spot where he'd fired before.
Quit your shooting! Already been hit!
Raise up and drop your arms over this side of the fence where I can see them.
I'm hitting a leg. I can't get up.
Can if you want to bad enough. I want to see you before I move.
A hand showed at the top of the fence, then another, then the mashed-in, greasy sombrero, and finally a grimy, stubbled face. The big man painfully dragged himself up onto his legs, or leg, Dundee judged, and hung his arms over the fence where Dundee could see them. Dundee pushed to his feet, the saddle gun pointed at the man.
Now you just stand there out of the way. Make one move and I'll put a bullet through the third button on that dirty shirt.
I'm bleeding, I tell ya!
You could bleed a lot worse.
Dundee had forgotten the cabin and the excitement. He glanced that way again, but saw no one. He cautiously approached the wounded cow thief. The man's face was rapidly draining of color. Just as Dundee reached him, the rustler's good leg gave way. Fearing a trick, Dundee sprinted the last three strides to the fence and shoved the carbine across. The rustler's six-shooter lay on the ground. The man wasn't going to reach for it anyway. He was all but unconscious. Dundee climbed over the fence and set the carbine against a post where he could reach it in a hurry. He dropped to one knee. He saw a small pool of blood beneath the leg and a spreading stain on the trousers.
Looks like I can still shoot a little.
Damn you!
You shot at me first, or else your partner did. Great partner he was, took to the toolies like a boogered rabbit.
Damn him too!
Dundee slit the pants leg open. The bottom of it had sealed and was holding blood like a sagging canvas holds rain. Best he could tell, the bullet had gone clean through.
First thing we gotta do is stop this bleeding, or you'll just lie here and drain your life away.
He wrapped his neckerchief around the leg above the wound. He stuck the closed pocket knife inside and used it to twist with. The flow of blood eased to a tiny trickle.
I expect you need a good shot of whiskey. You got any in the cabin?
The rustler shook his head.
I got some on my pack horse. I'll go fetch it. Don't you run off no place.
He saw no guns other than the rustler's six-shooter. Examining it, he was tempted to keep it. But on reflection, he decided some town-raised judge might find him guilty of theft, even though he had taken it off of a cow thief. Courts had a way of doing off-center things like that. He hurled the pistol as far as he could throw it out into the tall grass. The cattle moved out of a corner as he crowded them a little. A horse tied to a tree back of the corral had broken one leather rein in the excitement, but the other rein had held it. Dundee opened the corral gate so the cattle could wander out, then strode to the horse. It rolled its eyes at him, hinting trouble. Warily, Dundee swung up and took a tight grip with his knees, expecting the horse to pitch. It humped a little, but that was all. Dundee rode him over the rocky hill, got his own two horses, and came back. The rustler still lay in the same spot.
Nice of you to stay around.
Dundee tilted a bottle of Titusville whiskey to take a drink himself first, then handed it to the outlaw.
Here, you better have yourself a strong snort. Won't cure anything, but it'll fuzzy edges a little.
He loosened the neckerchief and found the blood had almost stopped.
We better clean this wound out or you'll get an infection in it. Somebody will have a job of digging to do in these rocks.
He poured whiskey into the bullet hole.
See here what you went and made me do. I brought this whiskey along to drink, not to pour down some cow thief. Here, just as well finish what little's left.
Dundee then rewrapped the wound. Done with the bandage, he leaned on the fence and studied the wounded outlaw.
Your partner may not come back. He left here in an awful hurry.
Damn him!
If you just lay here and nobody comes, you'll likely fade away to the unhappy hunting grounds. That leg will go gangrene.
Damn the leg!
I ought to just leave you. You have a pen full of burnt cattle that rightfully belonged to another man. But seeing as I'm the one that shot you, it looks like I'm duty-bound to haul you in to runaway.
Damn runaway!
In the cabin, Dundee found a lantern and a can of coal oil. He poured the oil on the floor and walls, stepped to the door, and flipped a match inside. The whole shack wasn't worth $3 Confederate. Burning it was a gesture rather than any real damage to the cow thieves. But a man had to start someplace. That done, he managed to get the wounded man onto his horse and head in the direction where town ought to be. The pleasant smell of wood smoke reached him before he came over the hill. He knew he was near a runaway. Dundee stopped the bay horse at the crest and looked down on rock and log and picket houses clustered west from the sun-bright limestone face of a bluff just back from the riverbank. He recalled John Titus's words about runaway not being so much a town as simply a boil on a man's backside. The description was apt. Down the valley, perhaps 3/4 mile, he saw men lined up a horseback, waving their hats and cheering. In front of them, two riders spurred and whipped their horses in a tight race. coming to the turnaround point, sliding, and then spurring back to the finish line. Dundee had lost track of days, but he figured this was Sunday. Horse racing wasn't decent, except on a Sunday. Other days, a man was supposed to work. The wounded rustler was slumped in the saddle, tied on so he couldn't slide off if he lapsed into unconsciousness. Dundee considered turning the man's horse loose here and letting it carry him on down into the town where somebody would find him. But that was chancy. It would be like a fool horse to stop and graze or even head home again, so long as the man in the saddle was unable to rein him or spur him any.
If I got it to do, I'd just as well get on with it.
Dundee led the horses down off of the hill. He had seen a few army camp Chihuahuas and scab towns in his time, the sort of makeshift cutthroat communities that followed in the wake of the military like scavenging dogs. This looked like one of those, except there wasn't any soldiers. Studying an aimless scatter of ugly buildings, most of them saloons, plain and simple, he remembered what Titus had said about there possibly being a few good people here.
Damn few good ones, if any.
The first place he came to was a wagon yard, its fence built of cedar pickets sunk into the ground and tied together at the top by strips of green rawhide. Most wagon yards had a good-sized livery barn, but not this one. Where men slept beneath the stars much of the time themselves, nobody thought of putting horses under a roof. The barn was nothing more than a big shed. A bewhiskered man slouched out front on an upended barrel. A considerable pile of wood shavings lay in front of him, and he was adding to it right along.
It'll be two bits ahead. They'll run loose in the corral. You can sleep under the shed for nothing, provided you don't get careless and set fire to the hay. That comes extra.
I ain't trying to put the horses up. I've got a man here with a bad wound in his leg. Is there a doctor in this town?
The man got up and lazily walked around to Mexican Hat's horse.
Who is he?
Can't rightly say. Maybe his name's Damn. That's about the only word I've been able to get out of him.
Who shot him?
I did.
Your aim ain't much good, is it?
I asked you if there was a doctor.
No doctor. As far as I know, there never was. I reckon most people here are straight enough shots so when a man gets hit, he don't need no doctor. He needs a preacher. But there ain't no preacher, neither.
There ought to be somebody to look after a wounded man.
Well, you might carry him down to the Llano River Saloon. There's a woman down there. Pretty good at patching up after other people's sloppy shooting. Ask for Katie Long. You're a stranger here, ain't you?
Yep.
Well, that fella you got there, I recognize him now. He belongs to old Blue Roan. You won't be a stranger here very long.
His gaze drifted to the T-Bar brand on the pack horse.
I expect you got that one awful cheap.
I came by him legal. I work for John Titus.
May you rest in peace.
Dundee took his time studying the town as he moved along. Most of the buildings, he noted, were devoted to the sale of strong spirits and sundry types of entertainment. They ranged from little picket shacks that reminded him of a chicken crate up to one big, long structure built of stone. That one bore a small painted sign saying, Llano River Salon. They'd left an O out of that last word, but he doubted that many people noticed.
Don't you run off.
Go to hell.
A skinny little bartender scowled. From his looks, Dundee judged that he drank vinegar instead of whiskey.
What's your pleasure, friend?
I don't know as it's a pleasure. I'm looking for a woman by the name of Katie Long.
I expect Katie's taking her siesta.
Wake her up. I can't wait.
You've been steered wrong about Katie, friend. Anyhow, there's a couple places down the street where the girls don't ever sleep. Go try one of them.
I got a man outside bleeding to death. I'm told she's pretty good at patching up things like that.
She won't like it, but she'll come.
The little man walked through a double door and down a hall.
Katie! You got someone who wants to see you.
In a moment, he was back.
She'll be here directly. Let's me and you see if we can get your friend in.
A rider came jogging down the street, half asleep from some long celebration, almost bumping into the tied horses. He came awake at sight of the slumped over man in the sombrero.
Jace? Jason Carnes? What in the hell happened to you?
The rider glanced at Dundee and the bartender.
I better go tell Bunch and Rome.
He jerked the horse around and spurred into a lope toward the races.
Well, I found out who this is. Now, who's Bunch?
Bunch Carnes. He's a brother to Jace.
Tough?
Mixes rattlesnake juice with his whiskey.
Physically, there wasn't much strength in the little bartender. He lent moral support, not much else. Dundee supported most of the weight as they carried Carnes. A young woman came through the double doors at the back of the room, still buttoning a high-neck dress.
Bring him on back. We'll put him on a cot and see what we can do.
She was a good-looking woman, and Dundee figured she ought to be successful in her trade. She held a door open. He brushed against her, not altogether by accident.
Cricket, we'll need hot water. You better go start a fire in my cook stove.
Dundee pulled the wounded man's boots off and pitched him under the cot.
I reckon he's yours now, Katie.
You can call me Miss Long. You don't know me, and I don't know you.
He started to say, I know you, even if I never saw you before. She must have seen it in his eyes. Her dislike of him was instantaneous.
You've got the wrong idea, cowboy. I make enough money selling whiskey, I don't have to sell anything else. Let's see what we can do for your friend Jace.
He's not my friend.
You brought him in.
Figured I ought to. I shot him.
Accident?
Not especially.
Katie carefully unwrapped the cloth Dundee had bound around the leg.
Why didn't you just go ahead and kill him? Don't you know a dirty bandage can kill a man just as dead as a bullet can?
I had to make do with what was there.
Lucky thing the wound bled some and washed itself clean.
The bartender brought hot water in a pan. Katie Long cleansed the area around the wound with the skill of a trained nurse.
You know your business.
My business is whiskey and nothing else. There's no profit in this. Grit your teeth and hang on.
Carnes gripped the cot frame, his knuckles going white.
Jace! Where are you at, Jace?
You don't have to holler. He's here.
A tall figure filled the narrow doorway. Dundee's gaze lifted to a dirty, tobacco-stained beard, to a pair of angry, blood-tinged eyes.
Who was it done this to you, Jace?
He'll be all right.
Dundee tensed. He knew this would be Bunch Carnes, the brother.
Jace! I said, who done this to you? I want to know.
Dundee was glad he'd strapped on his pistol. He let his hands rest at his hips, handy.
Maybe you ought to leave him be.
What business is it of yours?
He's the one done it, Bunch. He's the one shot me.
Carnes' hand dropped. Dundee brought his pistol up so fast that Carnes froze, blinking. At this range, Dundee couldn't miss. Carnes swallowed. Katie Long watched open-mouthed. For long seconds, she held her breath until Carnes slowly raised his hand. Then, the moment of crisis passed, she pointed to the door.
Bunch Carnes, this is my place, and I'm telling you to clear out. If you two have got to kill each other, do it someplace else. I don't want to clean up the mess.
The gunman's fingers flexed, his flashing eyes watching Dundee's pistol. Dundee didn't let the pistol waver from Carnes' belly. He didn't speak, for at times like this he'd never seen much gain in conversation.
Carnes, I told you to get. You all do any shooting in here, one of you is liable to hit your brother. Damn if I want to see all my work wasted.
When you come out, cowboy, I'll be waiting in the saloon.
Katie stood in silence, her face paled.
It's all right now.
I don't know how you figure that with him waiting out yonder in the saloon. You don't know this town. You don't know people like Bunch and Jason Carnes.
I've run into a few.
Bunch Carnes isn't the smartest man on earth, but he's hard. Minute you step out into that hall, he'll put a bullet in you.
And what difference would that make to you?
Blood leaves a dark stain on the floor. It's hard to get out.
I'll try not to cause you no extra work.
Dundee moved to the deep, narrow window. Its frame was set so that the window moved sluggishly to one side. He slipped out the window and eased to the ground. Pistol in hand, Dundee edged up to the one side window of the saloon and peered cautiously with one eye. The bartender saw him but gave no sign. Bunch Carnes sat facing the double doors, pistol lying in front of him on a small square table. Dundee moved hurriedly past the window and on to the front of the building. He still held the pistol, but in a fight, the carbine would suit him better. He walked up to the bay at the hitching rail, drew the carbine, and dropped his pistol back into its holster. He moved quietly up to the door. Inside, he could see Carnes seated, back turned, his attention still fixed on the double doors. The bartender saw Dundee and dropped out of sight behind the bar. Dundee leveled the carbine.
Carnes, back away from that table and leave your six-shooter right where it's at.
Carnes went stiff.
I got a gun pointed at you. Give me a reason and I'll blow a hole in you that can run a wagon through.
Carnes slowly stood up. Dundee held his breath, watching the pistol. Carnes' hand was only inches from it. He drew clear of the table and turned, hands empty, face raging.
Why don't you just quit? I got no wish to kill you.
But I'm going to kill you, cowboy.
Your brother's alive. Why don't you just let it go at that?
He wasn't reaching Bunch Carnes, and he knew it.
I'll shoot him where he stands. That'll be the end of it. Won't be an end to it till I do.
The man was a thief, and in all likelihood a killer. The world would shed few tears if Dundee cut him down. In fact, it'd be a better place. But Dundee knew he couldn't pull the trigger, not this way.
Step away from that table and leave the pistol.
I can get another pistol.
Boots clomped on the front steps. Dundee stepped backward toward the corner, not letting the carbine waver from Carnes. A big man blocked off most of the light from the doorway. The same heavy-built old man who'd been at McCown's. This was Blue Roan. Roan Hardesty paused in the door as if undecided whether to come in or step back out into the street. He saw then that Carnes was out of reach of his pistol. He cast a long look at Dundee.
You again. They told me some stranger had brung Chase Carnes to town with a bullet hole in him. I ought to have known it'd turn out to be you.
If you got any influence over this man, you better use it.
Well, it was him that shot Chase. I'm fixing to kill him.
With your six-shooter lying over there on the table? You're just fixing to get your light blowed out, is all. This cowboy looks like he means business, Bunch.
So do I.
I need you alive, Bunch. Anyway, the weather's too hot for a funeral. You get yourself along.
But I said...
Get along. I'll talk to you later.
Carnes stared resentfully at Roan Hardesty, his eyes then drifting to Dundee and spilling their hatred.
I'm going because Roan says to. But don't think it's over, cowboy. I ain't even started yet.
Dundee held the carbine, not pointing it directly at Hardesty, but not letting the muzzle drop far either.
You can put away the hardware. I ain't gonna do you no harm.
You can bet your life you're not.
I promise you. I don't ever break a promise. Who the hell's tending bar around here? Where's Cricket?
The little bartender's head tentatively rose up from behind the pine bar, eyes curiously appraising the situation before he stood up to full height.
Whiskey, Cricket.
Hardesty started toward a few small tables. Dundee picked up Carnes' pistol and shoved it into his waistband. Hardesty pulled out a chair.
Sit yourself down.
Dundee sat in a corner where nobody could come up behind him. He watched Hardesty with distrust. The bartender set down a bottle and two glasses. Hardesty pulled the cork and poured the glasses full.
Here's to all the bold and foolish men. And there's a hell of a lot of them.
Dundee didn't touch his own drink. Hardesty noticed.
You don't trust me?
I make it a practice not to trust nobody.
A safe policy. But I gave a promise. Old Blue Roan has broke most of the laws that was ever passed, but he don't break a promise.
Dundee looked at the blue spots on the old man's broad face.
I didn't figure they called you that where you could hear it.
Oh, I'm not ashamed of my face, boy. I bear it like a medal, a thing to be proud of. I got it in the line of duty. I was in the late war, boy, the war of northern aggression. We charged into an artillery emplacement, and the whole thing went up. Right in my face. I was lucky I kept my eyes. When it was over, I had these marks for life. Sure, I fretted over them a while, but by and by, it come to me that they was honest marks. They was like a medal that a man wears all the time and don't even take off with his clothes. They tell the world that Roan Hardesty done his job. People have said some hard things about me, but there's one thing they can't take away. I done my duty, and I got the marks to prove it. Anyway, I didn't come here to talk about me. I want to find out about you. How come you to shoot Jason Carnes?
I come up on him and his partner venting the brands on some cattle. He shot at me first.
Where was this?
Back up in the hills, close to a cabin.
How come you fooling around up there anyway?
To see what I could find out.
And what'd you find out?
Where some of John Titus's cattle been going.
Roan Hardesty got up from the table. Dundee took a firm grip on the saddle gun. Hardesty walked to the door and looked out at Dundee's horses.
I'm getting old, I guess. Never even noticed the brand on that pack horse when I come in. You working for John Titus?
Dundee nodded.
What's old John figure on doing?
If I told you that, you'd know as much as I do.
Hardesty sat down again, taking another drink out of the glass.
Old honest John. Bet he never told you that he was a pretty good hand with a long rope once. As good a thief as I was, Pertnere. But he got to letting his conscience talk to him. And then he went and married. Church-going kind she was, she ruined him. He went honest, got rich, and turned his back on all his old friends.
Maybe you ought to have done the same.
No need to. I always had women. Never had to marry one.
I mean, you should have turned honest.
The meanest, dullest, most miserable people I know are honest. I like it better where I'm at.
Somebody may kill you one of these days.
You, maybe?
I hope not.
Dundee wouldn't have admitted it, but he found himself drawn to this old reprobate. The old man had the same disarming frankness as John Titus.
I'd as soon not have to shoot you neither, Dundee. I always had a soft spot for an honest man with guts. Wished I'd had you with me in the war. A few more like me and you, we'd have whipped them Yankees.
We might have.
Blue Roan stared at him through narrowed eyes, appraising him like he would judge a horse.
Dundee, I know John Titus. Whatever he's paying you, it ain't enough for the risk. Join up with me, and I'll show you where the money's at.
Venting other people's brands? I reckon not.
Well, look at it this way. It's free range, most of it. Biggest part of the land John Titus uses still belongs to the state of Texas. He's taking the use of it free, not paying a dime. And who is the state of Texas? Well, it's me and you and everybody else. John Titus is robbing all us taxpayers. If we run off a few piddling head now and then, it's just our way of making sure he pays something for the grass. We're doing the state of Texas a service, you might say.
I made John Titus a promise. I'll keep it.
I like a man who keeps a promise, but I can't guarantee you your safety. I can't be responsible for people like Bunch Carnes who think slow but shoot fast.
I've always took care of myself.
Keep on doing it. I'd sooner not have you on my conscience.
Hardesty stood up to leave, then turned again.
What connection you got with the McCowns?
Like I told you, I stopped there and they fed me.
That's all?
That's all, and I'll swear to it. I never saw them before.
You're worried because you think this is going to cause me to bear down on them. Don't fret yourself. Them and me, we had our trouble before you ever come here. That girl's the one you're really thinking about, ain't she? You know, she reminds me of the one old John Titus married. Pass her by, Dundee. She's not for you. All that honeysuckle and home cooking. She'd hogtie you like a slick-eared yearling.
When the old man was gone, Katie Long came back.
I heard most of that. You really come from John Titus?
Yep.
And you tell anybody who asks you?
I never been one to lie.
There's a time and a place for everything. In your place, I'd lie.
Way I heard it, a couple of other fellers come into this country and lied. They got killed. Me, I just come to find out who's been taking John Titus cattle and where they're going with them, that's all. Maybe you'd like to tell me and save me some trouble?
You're already in trouble. I'm keeping clear of it.
Through the front door, Dundee could see the corner of a small mercantile building across the rutted road that passed for a street. He saw a shadow move. He stood up, the carbine in his hands.
What is it?
You said you didn't want no trouble. Just stay put.
Keeping within the darkness of the room, he moved to a point where he had a better view of the mercantile. He watched a few minutes, waiting for more movement. He saw a hat brim edge out, and then part of Bunch Carnes' face as the tall man peeked around the corner. He saw a little of a gun barrel.
Well, I tried. Could as well have shot him a while ago.
Dundee maneuvered toward the door, staying close to the wall. He paused a moment, his shoulder to the wall, gauging where the horses were tied. He didn't want a stray shot to kill his bay or the pack animal. He glanced at the wide-eyed bartender, at the silent woman. He leaped out the door and lit running. He took Carnes by surprise. Dundee made three long strides before Carnes stepped out into the open, the pistol extended almost to arm's length in front of him, swinging to try to bring it in line with the running targets. Dundee threw himself to the ground. He aimed at Carnes' chest. Carnes was flung back, grabbing at his shirt in open-mouthed bewilderment, the pistol falling from his hand. He crumpled in a heap. Cautiously, Dundee moved forward, trying to watch Carnes and at the same time looking up and down the street for trouble. He kicked the pistol away, then knelt. He touched Carnes and drew his hand back. Carnes shuddered once, then lay still. Dundee arose, turned, and walked back to the saloon, the carbine smoking in his hands.
Well, at least we didn't leave blood on your floor.
Don't take it out on me. When you came here for John Titus, you knew you might kill somebody or maybe get killed yourself.
Dundee nodded darkly, watching a small crowd begin to gather around the body.
And don't blame me. All I do is operate a saloon.
In an outlaw town.
Look, cowboy, nobody's taken care of me since I was 14. I've minded my own business and left everybody else's alone. I just sell whiskey, and you're shooting my customers.
What's happening out there? Somebody tell me what's happened. Bunch, where you at, Bunch? What's happening out there, Bunch?
I suppose now it's up to me to tell him. Cowboy, I wish to hell you'd ride out of here.
I was just fixing to leave.
Dundee had had a bellyful of runaway. The hour or so he had whiled away in its contentious climb would do him until hell froze over. As far as he was concerned, they could burn the place to the ground. He even studied a bit about dropping a match in the dry grass, but the wind was blowing in the wrong direction. Bunch Carnes' blood drying in the sand was not the first Dundee had ever seen, or even the first he'd ever spilled. But this was one experience not improved by repetition. It was a thing that curdled a man's stomach, made him want to get off someplace and face up to his own private demons alone, with no eyes watching. Dundee couldn't see that it would benefit his mission any to hang around Runaway. Chances were somebody would just crowd him into smoking up the carbine again. Let John Titus do the shooting. They were his cattle. So, looking over his shoulder to be sure the only thing behind him was his shadow, he left Runaway. He rode west a while, then south. Long days stretched into weeks while he prowled the endless hills, leading his pack horse, looking, mapping, noting brands. Sometimes when he found a cabin or a camp, he'd sit among the cedars on some high vantage point and watch for hours with that spyglass until he was sure he knew what brand went with what people and whether it was a bona fide brand or some optimistic conversion. Times he knew he was not only watching, but being watched. Times he would look back and see a horseman or two patiently trailing after him, keeping distance. When he stopped, they stopped. When he rode, they rode. Nobody made a threatening move, but no longer did he enjoy that feeling of obscurity he had had before the trip to Runaway. He was sure the word about him had spread through all these hills. Maybe they didn't know exactly what he was up to, but they knew he was here. He had to watch for more than cattle now. He took to eating his supper before dark, then riding into the forest before making cold camp in a thicket somewhere. If they caught him in his blankets, they had to be doing a good job of hunting. The list of blotted brands kept growing in his tally book. It had worried him at first because he had so few names to go with the brands. He had no one to go to, no one to ask. But in time, he quit stewing about it. He knew the greasy sack spreads where these brands were claimed. He knew many of the men by appearance, even if he didn't know their names. Besides, most of them probably weren't using the names their mothers had given them anyway. A cow thief by any name was still a cow thief. There came a point, south, where Dundee found no more T-Bar cattle. He came across other fresh brands on grown cattle, and he didn't doubt they'd originally been something else, but not the T-Bar. These likely had been rustled in the south and brought north, just as Titus cattle had been stolen in the north and brought south. The way Dundee pictured it, these Llano Hills were kind of a crossroads for livestock that had made a nocturnal change in ownership. Some of the cattle he saw here bore all the trademarks of Mexico. They had no doubt crossed the Rio Grande in a right smart of a rush. Well, they were a problem for somebody, but not for Dundee. His wages were being paid by John Titus. He began bearing east again, some to the north. Slowly, he was completing a wide circle, and with it, his map. The circle would be closed when he returned to the part of the country where he'd started, Rocker M. The ranch had been stirring in his mind like a restless squirrel worrying a pile of leaves. Every time he came across a valley which in any way resembled the McCown country, he remembered the young woman standing in the dog run between the two sections of the sturdy log cabin, her long brown hair floating gently in the wind. He remembered the slenderness of her, the voice, the eyes, the soft woman smell. She came to him in the golden sunlight of morning and in the dark of night. She came like a song that has been once heard, and not clearly, but which echoes on in memory. Sometimes, staring at the darkness in a live oak mott or cedar thicket, he would rub his scratchy beard, smell the dry dust and the smoke that had sifted into the fiber of all his clothes and clung there. He was glad she couldn't see him this way. He would try to be sure that she never saw him like that again. He was carrying close to $200 now, about as much money as he had ever owned at one time in his life. That wasn't much prospect at all for a woman. Times, when he thought of her, he also thought of the freewheeling, easy-drifting life he'd led, and wondered if he was really ready to change. Damn, but it had been fun. Hard, hungry, stifling hot or freezing cold, but fun just the same. A restlessness still stirred in him, a prickly feeling that came over him every so often and set him to moving without direction, without any purpose except simply to go. There wasn't much recommendation to present to a woman, not that kind of woman. Times, too, he got to wondering if word had drifted back to her about the shooting and runaway. It probably had. When she next looked at him, would she see Dundee, or would she just see the blood on his hands? He was nearing the close-up point on his circle when the heavy rain came. It poured bountifully from a leaden sky. The thunder rolling, the water singing as it filtered down through the hillside grass in a growing flood. Dundee had no idea where to find a ranch house. He searched for an overhang he could squeeze under, but he couldn't find one. He huddled beneath the live oaks until the rain trickled down through the leaves and reached him. The horses hung their heads and took it, for they had never known a roof. But Dundee was soaked to the skin, his shoulders hunched and his teeth clicking. He decided he had as well be miserable on the move as miserable hunkered on the ground beneath these leaky trees. At length he came down off of a hill and saw a picket shack. It was a miserable hovel, and any other time he wouldn't have given it a second glance. But now, with the rain and the wind chilling him to the bone, it looked as pretty as a marble church. In a set of brush pens, he saw goats hunched against the cold. They weren't leggy and spotted and made up all colors like the Mexican goats he had often seen. These were angoras, carrying fine, long, white mohair, which tended to curl into ringlets, even wet. But he was too cold to wonder much or pause to admire a pen full of drenched goats.
Hello, the house!
A slump-shouldered old man stood in the open door, the wind whipping his snowy beard as he squinted through the rain. He pointed a long, bony finger.
Shed's yonder way! Put your horses up and get yourself back here to the drive!
The shed was mostly just an arbor, closed on three sides and given a liberal cover of sod and brush on top to turn the water. He took off saddle and pack and turned the horses loose. He stood a moment under the shed. The first time in hours the rain hadn't been beating down on his back. It felt good here. But the shack would feel even better, for he could see smoke curling up from a stone chimney. He stopped abruptly as he saw a cowhide stretched across the top of a fence. It was fresh, maybe 2 or 3 days old. He started to pass it by, but curiosity was stronger than the cold. The flesh side was turned up, the brand easily visible through it, the T-Bar.
Hell of a country where even a goat herder steals cattle.
He dug the pistol out of his saddlebag and strapped it around his waist beneath his yellow slicker. He stalked across the yard and into the cabin. The old man stared at him with pale gray eyes that were almost lost beneath bushy gray brows. A Mexican boy of 18 or so sat in a wooden framed goat hide cot in a corner, rolling a brown paper cigarette. Dundee was too cold to play games. He flung the challenge.
You got a cowhide out yonder with a T-bar on it.
I'll bet you're that feller I've been hearing about. Ain't your name Dandy?
It's Dundee. And I asked you about that hide.
Well, you're cold. And I bet you ain't et yet.
I'm asking you for an answer.
I bet you're hungry. Well, you peel some of them wet clothes off and we'll have dinner here directly. You feel like a new man when you surrounded some of this fresh beef.
About that hide.
Let's don't talk business right now. You're cold and hungry, and I never did like to argue with a hungry man. A hungry man just ain't reasonable. You get your belly filled, then we'll talk.
A Dutch oven sat astraddle some blazing oak wood in the open fireplace, steak sizzling.
That steak yonder, I reckon it came out from under that hide.
The old fella nodded.
That's T-bar beef. You expect me to eat it?
Well, why not? You work for old Titus, don't you? And if you was on the home ranch, you'd be eating Titus beef, wouldn't you? So what's the difference if you eat it here? Who's better entitled to it?
The off-center logic went by Dundee so fast he couldn't argue with it. The steak smelled good, and the old man had called the tune. Dundee was hungry as a she-wolf with 6 pups. The Mexican wasn't saying anything. Dundee didn't know if he understood English, even. But the herder sat like a suspicious watchdog, glancing protectively at the old man, most of the time keeping his narrowed eyes fastened on Dundee. Dundee had a cold feeling that if he made any menacing move toward the old goat man, he'd have to beat that young Mexican to the floor or be crushed himself. In addition, there was a black and white dog of a breed or mixture that Dundee didn't know. It sat under the Mexican's feet, gaze never wavering from the stranger. Dundee might have to fight him, too. Coffee boiled in a pot in the corner of the fireplace. The old man poured a cup of cold water into it to settle the grounds and brought the pot up to set it on the rough table. It left black ash marks, but they were hardly noticeable. The table was already as discolored as it could get.
Steak's done. Got a pot of beans, too. Hope you don't mind cold bread.
The tinware was battered and tarnished, but that was of no matter. The food was good. Dundee's eyebrows went up when the old man lifted one piece of steak out of the popping grease and dropped it into an old plate on the dirt floor for the dog. The dog sniffed it eagerly, but knew enough to wait for it to cool. The old man dropped him a couple of cold biscuits to keep him busy.
Man's got a good working dog. He's got to take care of him.
Dundee wondered how John Titus would appreciate it seeing his beef fed to a goat herder's dog. The meal over, Dundee leaned back and rubbed his stomach.
That sure was fine.
No trick to it if you got good beef.
Such as Titus beef?
I tried not to notice the brand. While ago, I said you'd be eating T-bar beef if you was on the home ranch. Fact is, I bet you'd be eating some neighbor's beef. John Titus kills strays just like everybody else. A man's own beef don't ever taste as good.
Titus might not see it your way.
The fact is, Dandy, I kept that steer from being stole.
What do you mean?
Some fellers brought a herd of cattle through here 3-4 days ago, heading south. They scattered my goats by accident, so to make it right, they offered me this steer. He was lame and couldn't keep up anyway.
The rest of the cattle, they carry a T-bar brand?
Like I said, in this country, I don't ever see no brands.
The men driving those cattle, who were they?
Now, Dandy, the way I lived to get so old was not by seeing anything that wasn't my business and not saying nothing about what I didn't see.
I could tell John Titus you'd been eating his beef.
If you think it'll make things right, I'll swap you for that steer. He was lame and not worth much. I'll pick out two of my top goats. You can take them along.
What would I do with two goats?
That'd be up to you. All I want is to pay a debt if I got one. And I ain't sure as I do. After all, I did save that steer from being stole.
Dundee shrugged. He didn't figure John Titus would be very hard on a man who just butchered a steer once in a while to eat. Especially if Dundee never told him. Dundee changed the subject.
Them are unusual looking goats you got. They work good in this country?
Them is Angoras, hair goats. You shear mohair off them like you shear wool off a sheep. They're the common thing for this part of the country once the cow thieves leave. They eat brush and stuff like that. If he has to, a goat can live on next to nothing. A man can live on goat. Hard to starve a goat man to death.
The old man stared through the door at the rain still pelting down.
Looks like it's liable to hang on a while. You're welcome to stay here, Dandy.
Much obliged.
Where are you headed when it's over with? You figure on trying to trail them cattle?
Won't be no tracks left after this rain. Nah, I reckon I'll go see some folks. Then I'll head back to the T-bar.
Well, this is good country down here. You could do worse than stay.
What for? I got no cattle and I don't aim to steal any.
You could start small and build as the country built.
This is nothing but an outlaw country.
The outlaws won't last. They's just part of a country's growing up, like a kid has to put up with measles and chicken pox. One day, they'll all be gone, but the country'll be here. All we need in these hills is some good people. Well, and a little more rain.
That's all hell needs.